Okay, we're ready to go now.
Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development, come to order, please. We'll start with a couple of quick work sessions, hopefully quick, and then on to a public hearing on 2829. So I'll start with a work session on House Bill 2182. Whoever, if you could bring us up to speed on that bill once again, please.
2182 amends statute to expand the eligibility of alternative fuel projects to use the State Department of Energy's small-scale energy loan program, expands eligibility from vehicle fleets and fueling facilities to include other kinds of equipment fueled by alternative energy sources, increases the term of service for members of the Small-Scale Local Energy Project Advisory Committee from 2 to 4 years.
Thank you, and it also gives me a chance to thank Representative Benz for filling in during my absence on Thursday. I understand you all adopted some amendments to 2182, so if there's not any discussion on 2182, it would be my intention to move this bill out. Is there any discussion of 2182 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Galizio.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Galizio moves House Bill 2182 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of the motion? Representative Thatcher.
Well, you're going to do what you're going to do, but I just want to say that I don't feel comfortable expanding state loan programs. So just on the record here.
Okay. Is there other discussion? Thank you. With that, given Representative Thatcher, what you your comment, I'm guessing you would it would might make sense to take a roll call vote. Is that
I will be a no.
Okay. I want to give you the chance to
sure.
to do that. So let's take a roll call vote, please, on motion to move House Bill 2182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. If you would please call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative
Colby?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
Aye.
Vice Chair Galizio?
Aye.
Aye. Motion having received the required majority is passed. House Bill 2182 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there anyone who would be interested in carrying House Bill 2182?
Yeah.
Representative Bailey.
Happy to do
Thank
it.
You. Representative Bailey will carry. Now, with that, we close the work session on House Bill 2182 and open the work session on House Bill 2720. Barbara.
HB 2720 allocates monies from the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund to the Oregon Innovation Council for deposit in the Oregon Innovation Fund, delineates specific organizations and the amounts they are to be allocated for the Oregon Innovative Fund, limits the biennial expenditures of lottery funds allocated to the Council for the Oregon Innovation Fund, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2009.
Thank you. Colleagues, you'll remember we heard a long and I think fruitful discussion of the Oregon Innovation Council when this bill was first before us. It's before us again. We do have, I think, an amendment that deserves at least some mention and discussion in this context. I'm looking through my packet. I'm not sure I see it, but I know that Paul Cosgrove and Pat Murphy are interested in having something to say about that, so the gentleman would help us promote. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove, representing Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, and I'm here with Pat Murphy. Mr. Murphy and a couple of Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership clients appeared before you in an informational hearing several weeks ago to talk about how innovation and lean manufacturing goes hand-in-hand in sustainability for Oregon small manufacturers. And I want to just take a second to thank the chair for helping us obtain a legislative revenue analysis of what we thought was the case, which is this is a case in which an economic development program, by spending money, we actually in the same biennium make more money than we spend by a factor of a couple, three plus. That revenue analysis, I believe, has being passed out to you, or
momentarily
will be passed out to you in just a moment. And the way we were able to obtain that was to obtain an amendment to this bill, which I think the chair's pleasure is not to move today, but nonetheless to obtain the amendment to get the analysis so that when we go down to Ways and Means and talk about the department's budget, we'll have that data. And it's really the only way we can get that data easily. The other two pieces that are being passed out to you are just sort of a wrap-up on that informational hearing. It is the productivity data that OMEP has been reporting to the department over the last year and a half of this biennium, and it reflects that it's a very effective program in retaining and creating new jobs. And then lastly, it just so happens that the Portland Business Journal last week published an article about OMEP and how it's working with small manufacturers, and you have, I think, as one of your handouts, that article. So this is mostly just an informational wrap-up of what you saw in that informational hearing, and we'll be having further discussions about this when the budget for the department comes up in Ways and Means later this session. And with that, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Murphy's here to answer any questions, and
Thank you.
Am as well, but I recognize you want to proceed with your work session. So.
Thank you. And just as a little bit further note of explanation, it was our intent to have a sort of placeholder that could go to Ways and Means dealing with the manufacturing extension partnerships. I think that did our discussions of that demonstrated its value. I also want to be very respectful of the process that the Oregon Innovation Council has gone through. So I think this mechanism will allow the Ways and Means process to look at OMEP as a discrete element. I've had some conversations with the co-chair of the relevant subcommittee, and I'm confident that they'll get the consideration that they deserve in that process. So this is a chance for us to get our committee's opinion and consideration of the Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program generally on the record to have any discussion about that. And I think we, without adopting the amendment, can send a message to that committee that, if it's so, that we believe in the value of this and commend it to their attention. So I think that's a reasonable summary. It's my intention not to move the amendment so that we can keep the Innovation Council's process consistent, it can move forward, and OMEP can go down with this good consideration analysis from the Legislative Revenue Office and proceed along the same way. Is there any discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just checking in to make sure I heard you correctly. We don't actually have a Dash 1 amendment in front of us, do we?
We do not.
We do not.
Okay,
the
you.
Amendment can...
I'll stop think, looking. Thank you.
good point, Representative Holby. I think you can reasonably infer the amendment to simply say that $1.5 million would be dedicated to OMEP, and the analysis that we do have now from legislative revenue suggests that if that were to be enacted, additional tax revenue, I'm reading from the last line of the second paragraph, additional tax revenue to the state is expected to be $5.3 million for the 2009-2011 biennium. So that's good evidence we wanted the Ways and Means Committee to have as they consider the possibility of including OMEP as a budget note. Is there further discussion of the missing Dash 1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you. And so we are in work session on House Bill 2720. Is there any discussion of the bill? Representative Holby.
Just one more clarification on the Dash 1. Does that $1.5 million come out of what we were recommending of the total, or is it in addition to what was in the bill?
I think it would be in addition, having the caveat on that it was sort of for illustrative purposes only.
Okay.
Yes, it would not reduce. The intent was not to reduce the other places to which this money is directed.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Further discussion on House Bill 2720?
Yes, maybe just okay, a general comment. I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't feel comfortable until I see the whole budget picture, where we're going with this, because my first thought, looking at lottery funds, I know some of this money is coming out of lottery funds, and you know, maybe it would be better spent this session, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but putting it towards the schools and the public safety and the you know, seniors and nursing homes and all that we're hearing about from all our constituents, rather than going this direction, so that we're not having to take out so much for general funds from the general fund for those programs that are behind severely. So I don't feel comfortable voting for this at this time, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak to that.
I appreciate your comment, and I don't intend to dissuade you from your vote, but just to clarify, what will happen with this bill, should we adopt, the motion will be to move it to Ways and Means. To your point, who has the perspective to be able to weigh all the competing demands, and you're right to suggest that there are far more than we have resources to support in the current environment. So whether or not that responds to your concern,
I understand, but sometimes when we're sending things on to another committee or to another chamber, we need to signal that maybe this isn't just a slam dunk, and that's, I guess, the point I would be making.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there comments about House Bill 2720? Seeing none. Representative Galizia?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2720 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Galizia, did you mean for the bill to go to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation?
Yes, that's exactly what I meant. I'm glad you can read my mind.
Thank you, Representative Galizia. Representative Galizia moves House Bill 2720 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, would you please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative
Colby? Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
Aye.
Vice Chair Galizia?
Aye.
Chair Lee?
Aye.
The motion having received the required majority is declared passed. House Bill 2720 goes to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, committee. With that, close the work session on House Bill 2720 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2829. Barbara.
HB 2829, amend standards of conduct for directors of corporations by authorizing them to consider certain interests in determining what they believe to be in the corporation's best interest. Delineate those interests they may consider.
Thank you. And I believe we have several people who are here to testify. The custom is generally to invite members who are here first so that they can get off to their other business. Representative Garrett, appreciate your patience if you'd like to come up. And I know a couple other people are recognized who are here. Mr. Roy, Mr. Wolfstone, would you like to come up at the same time or wait?
I think these two gentlemen are
there. Very good. You're welcome to come up now or wait till Representative Garrett finishes. Thank you. Thanks. Now I have the sign-up sheet, and I know who wants to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Garrett, state representative from House District 38, Lake Oswego, and parts of Southwest Portland. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2829. In my other job, I'm an attorney at the Portland firm of Perkins Coie, and my practice involves some corporate law, but I'm by no means an expert in corporate governance, and so I'm going to keep this brief and then leave matters in the good custody of some of the practitioners who have helped prepare this legislation. But I want to tell you briefly why I'm here to support the bill. This bill amends the Oregon Business Corporation Act and was drafted by, as I said, a group of practitioners and one professor. And it basically addresses the question of how does a director decide what is in the best interest of the corporation. As you all know, a director owes a fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of the corporation. The purpose of this bill is to recognize that corporations are not just profit-maximizing entities. They are important social actors. They are run by people who live in communities, and they have profound consequences on the social fabric in which we all live. And therefore, directors who are asking what is in the best interest of the corporation should be free to account for more than what is in the short-term financial. In other words, how they should be able to account for more than what will have the most immediate gain on short-term financial value. This bill would authorize them to account for economic, environmental, social, and ethical considerations as well. Arguably, this doesn't create a substantive change in Oregon law because the business judgment rule already protects directors. But and this These principles are actually already codified in Oregon law in the context of corporate takeovers. What this bill would do is explicitly authorize corporate directors to take these same considerations into account in their day-to-day governance of the corporation. The purpose of the bill is not to create any new risk of liability or to require directors to do anything that they don't presently do. It is permissive. It simply makes explicit that directors may do more than account for maximization of short-term gain. That's the bill in a nutshell, and I think with that I'll end my testimony and give it to Mr. Roy.
Thank you, Representative.
I defer to the professor.
Please.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Pearson. I live in Eugene, and I'm a professor at the University of Oregon Law School. I'm here in my individual capacity, though, and not speaking on behalf of the law school or the university. My primary area of expertise is corporate law, and I've taught the subject for more than 8 years at the University of Oregon and for 1 year at Willamette Law School. And I also publish scholarship in the area. I'm a member of the drafting committee as well, and I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2829 as modified by the Dash 2 amendments. So Oregon already has a other constituency statute, as was mentioned. Currently, it is limited, though, to takeover or merger context, which is consistent with the general legislative history of these statutes, which about two-thirds of the states in the country have. One goal of the bill is to remove that limitation so that it is generally applicable. In my view, this does not substantively change Oregon corporate law. As was mentioned, the business judgment rule, which is a bedrock principle of corporate law in Oregon and Delaware and every state in the country, protects the discretion of corporate managers when they make decisions in general and in the takeover context as well. And so for that reason, I don't believe that the bill, which would amend the, well, which would eliminate the takeover limitation, would have any change on Oregon law. If anything, what it would do is clarify the business judgment rule in Oregon, which, because these cases don't come up as often in Oregon as they might in other jurisdictions, Oregon corporate law on this point is not as well settled as in other jurisdictions and as companies and directors would like. So to that extent, it would give corporate managers a little bit more security and comfort in making decisions and knowing that they would have the discretion that the business judgment rule is meant to afford them. It would provide two other benefits, I believe. One is that it would help dispel the misconception that corporate boards exist to make as much money as possible for the shareholders of the company. And it also, third, it might encourage the directors of Oregon corporations to view their entities, the enterprise, a little bit more broadly than just looking at it as the shareholders and only the shareholders. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions, although I think it might be
easier to wait till I won test.
Let's do that and hear from you, Mr. Roy, and then we'll have some questions, I suspect.
I'm Richard E. Roy. I'm the co-director of the Center for Earth Leadership in Portland. I was a corporate lawyer at Stoll Reeves from 1970 to 1993, and then in 1993 I left so my wife and I could be full-time volunteers in the what was really the emergent sustainability movement at that point. And so we've worked consistently for the past 16 years, and the nature of our work is we encourage individuals, businesses, governmental agencies to voluntarily adopt practices that are more sustainable. So we're not involved in litigation or confrontation of any sort. House Bill 2829 is directly aligned with a couple of developments that are important in the state of Oregon. The first is the broad societal goal of sustainability, and then the second thing is there's kind of an accelerating recognition within the business community itself that sustainability is and should be a part of corporate responsibility, and so this is directly aligned with that. If you take the concept of sustainability itself, as you would know in this committee, it all flowed in a way from the definition of the 1987 Brundtland Report. And it's basically developing means by which we can meet our current needs and without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. That particular idea then has been incorporated into the Oregon statutes, and it's also been incorporated into the Oregon Business Summit. So it's a common recognition in Oregon that sustainability is a good thing. With this in mind, in early 2008, I organized a group. I invited seven prominent corporate lawyers in Portland, and Judd and myself. And the question that we had was, if you take the Oregon Business Corporation Act, which is foundational to the operation of Oregon corporations, are there amendments to that which might encourage sustainable practices? And House Bill 2829, I guess it's -2, is the end result of months of work and conversations with a lot of experts on corporate law in Oregon. And I'd say there are just, I think there are two things about this statute that are important. The first is it's totally permissive. So there's nothing in here that would mandate anyone to do anything. And that was an important linchpin to this whole process. The second thing is that by explicitly bringing the language of environmental, social, and ethical concerns into the statute, it makes it clear that directors are permitted to consider those matters in decision-making. And I know as a corporate lawyer for 23 years, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the nature of a corporation and what directors can and cannot do, so this broadens their discretion. It's totally consistent with the practices of many well-known corporations now who operate on the triple bottom line and promote themselves as being in favor of sustainability.
Thank you. Let me just ask one quick question before the rest of the committee has a chance, and that's just to clarify. We have the -2 amendments in front of us. They've not yet been adopted, but if you're not prepared to speak to the amendments as much, perhaps the other gentlemen are. But in general, the intent, I'd love for your clarification of this, is not an additional requirement. It's permissive for corporate directors, and I'd love for you to say something about that, please.
Right. Well, if you take this -2, you all have that, I believe.
Yes.
In paragraph 5A, mm-hmm. In the third line it says may consider. And so when a director is considering what is in the best interest of a corporation, the director may consider these matters. By being explicit, then that makes it clear that if a corporation wants to operate and pursue the triple bottom line, that's perfectly okay. And without it being explicit, there can be misunderstandings.
Thank you.
Right. And let me just add that that is under the business judgment rule in Oregon and elsewhere. That is the case already, although Oregon law on the business judgment rule is a little bit sparse and a little bit uneven. Let's say.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel?
Representative
Paulby? No. We have two other experts.
Excellent. Good point. Good reminder. We have two other attorneys who will be following this panel as well. So,
do you want to hear from the experts who are?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
Actually, I'm pretty sure I don't.
Okay.
You may have to anyway, but
I may have
question.
To. I don't know. I thought I was fine with this bill until I heard you aspiring to Delaware, and then it kind of caught my ear. Really, I'm just kind of curious about the making these considerations permissive. So it occurs to me that if that's the case, and this is good for all Oregon corporations, that we're allowing them to consider things in a permissive way,
What if there's really a case where a corporation doesn't do that, and it's really quite egregious as to the impacts to society or your community that they didn't consider these other impacts? Does the corporation at that point have some sort of responsibility to the community because they didn't consider something that they probably should have, or that they really should have? I mean, I can think of many current corporations in the world today that I could think of like that.
Right. My inclusion of Delaware was just to point out that this is not this is a mainstream bedrock corporate principle that is the case, the business judgment rule, that is the case in Delaware, where the law is a lot better settled on this issue, and it's also the case, I believe, in every other jurisdiction. In Oregon, though, like I said before, it's a little bit there's a little bit less certainty because there are just fewer cases, and some of the cases maybe aren't don't adhere to the principle as much as they should. So that's why I mentioned Delaware.
Well, I can talk to you more about my concerns about Delaware, but sure. It's a different
but
bill.
The second part of your question about permissive considerations, there are certainly permissive considerations. Companies can consider these things if they want to, as I believe they can currently under the business judgment rule, if that is deferred to, as it should be. And they may not. A company can focus on profits and not pay as much attention to communities and to employees and to other constituencies. And that is their discretion. To be sure, though, the board of directors of the company and the managers owe fiduciary duties to act loyally and in good faith and legally and carefully. And so to the extent that they do things which are illegal, just like anyone else, that would not be permitted. This just permits discretion, pretty broad discretion, consistent with the business judgment rule, for good faith, loyal, legal, informed decision making.
And I would add on that, a big piece of sustainability is beyond compliance, because we have environmental laws, we have a lot of laws on the books, and it goes without saying that corporations need to comply with laws and regulations. A great deal of this is the sustainability movement since 1987 has been about companies taking steps beyond compliance, and we have some great examples actually in Oregon of companies that have gone beyond compliance. So this is a recognition that if you go beyond compliance, that those considerations are okay for the directors.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The language in the Dash 2 amendment found on line 4, in a manner that the director reasonably believes is in the best interest of the corporation, would suggest, or I read it to mean or to govern the balance of the language.
It does, yes.
It does.
And that language comes out of, it would be subparagraph 1. I don't have the whole statute, I just have this Dash 2 amendment. But the overriding thing is that the directors have to operate in the best interest of the corporation. And this is all subject to that.
A follow-up. Please. And so that language then, I don't want to say it moots the rest of it, but it certainly controls it. Is that correct?
It is controlling, yeah. You have to operate in a manner that you believe in the best interest of the corporation. And then this says, and in doing so, these considerations are okay. And so there is an overriding duty to the corporation. And do you have additional comments? Yeah.
And just to put this in perspective for us, if someone, a stockholder, was unhappy with the decision made by the board and then filed the appropriate lawsuit to get at how the decision was actually made, is that the point at which we would see someone explain how they incorporated a sustainability argument into something that was to benefit the stockholders? They would say, well, of course, under this new statute that the Dash 2 amendments adopted by the 2009 legislature, we're allowed to take into account such things as the environmental impacts or factors, and that was reasonable given this language. Is that how we would anticipate seeing this play out in a litigational format?
Well, I don't think it would play out like that, because under the current business judgment rule, then directors have discretion to take these into account. That's just not commonly understood. So, and Jed, you can add your comments to this, but the idea of making it explicit is so that when a director is saying, how am I to operate here, then there's something in the statute that said you operate in a manner that's in the best interest of the corporation, and in doing so, you can consider these matters. So it would be comfort to directors who would like to operate in a responsible manner. Statutory comfort.
Yes, I am just trying to ask where we might actually see it in a litigational format where someone's unhappy with the fact that someone took comfort in that, in this language, and brought into play an environmental sustainability argument for justifying an action. And I'm just wondering if this expands the scope to a point that passes outside the realm of what a director can reasonably do. I know I'm vaguely familiar with the business judgment rule. It's very, 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 very broad. And it's so broad that, however, I guess it's not quite broad enough, or we wouldn't need this language to add comfort to the folks making the decisions.
Well, I think as Jed said, and Jed, you should comment, the business judgment rule is not well settled in Oregon because it's a matter of judicial case law. And this case law is very, very sparse. So you would have to project. It's very difficult to rely on case law. If I assume the role as a director of a corporation and I'm interested in pursuing the triple bottom line and sustainability and so forth, then this statute is a clarifying document because it makes it clear that you don't have to go to court to find this out, basically.
And can I just add that currently, or at, if the amendment, if the bill as amended was enacted, currently a shareholder has pretty narrow grounds on which to attack a decision of the board of directors. They can say that the board of directors breached their fiduciary duty of loyalty or good faith. They acted in bad faith, or they acted without proper information. But they can't, under the business judgment rule, bring a claim and succeed just because they disagree with the decision-making process or the decision on the merits of the company's management. That's not who the shareholders don't manage the company. The managers manage the company. If the shareholders don't like it, they have a couple of options, including selling or voting for someone else the next time the board of directors is up for election.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm trying to figure out exactly how this standard would be used to justify an action. So I went to litigation as the device. Is there some other way that a director would use this to protect, defend, justify the action taken, other than in litigation? When will they need to use this?
I've sat with lots of boards of directors. I've kind of been their corporate counsel. And I think the primary benefit of this is that when a director comes in and assumes the role of director of a corporation, there are notions that you have a fiduciary duty to maximize profits. This is not true, but there are those notions out there. When that director looks in the statute as to what are allowable considerations, then it's explicit in the statute, and you don't have to go to court to find out if those were allowable considerations. In other words, Oregon judicial law is very murky, is the way I would describe it.
I would agree.
Thank you. Are there further questions?
We have a couple of others, too. Okay.
If I could just ask Professor, how do you pronounce her?
Sneerson.
Sneerson. The inclusion of the terms social and ethical, we're talking a lot about sustainability and environmental concerns. I'm just wondering, can you just talk about why those words are included and how that comports with the business judgment rule as is?
I don't want to. I'll answer the question, but I think Jim Kennedy will speak more to the specifics of the different considerations. But let me just respond, and I'm happy to talk longer if you'd like. That's a permissible consideration for board of directors to take into account. You know, economic things, environmental things, social things, ethical things are things that, you know, not only should they take into account, but things that probably we would all want them to take into account, and probably things that the shareholders of their company would probably want them to take into account.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering how does that compare with, I know you're saying the case law is sparse, but how does that compare, well, I should ask you, sir, how does that compare with the business judgment rule as written?
Well, first of all, one thing to note is if you take the three-legged stool of the triple bottom line, you know, the companies that pursue the triple bottom line, it's environmental, social, and economic. So if you take the social, you ask about the social issue, then that's really a part of the accepted definition of sustainability. Ethical there's been a certain climate of conduct, of unethical conduct in recent times, and this is just kind of a statement that ethical considerations are welcome. So,
are there further questions? Looks like we've exhausted our questions for now. We appreciate you being here, and hope you'll stick around in case we come up with any more.
Okay, thank you. We have a couple of colleagues here.
Yes, please. Jim Kennedy and Jeff Wolfstone. You guys are well choreographed, so I imagine you've already decided who's going first.
We do.
Very good.
Chair Reed and members of the committee, my name is James M. Kennedy. For the record, I practice with the Portland law firm of Kennedy & Kennedy. As a member of the drafting committee, I am here today to urge the passage of House Bill 2829, but only as modified by the -2 amendments. I'm going to explain briefly what the meaning, effect, and source is for the various provisions in the -2 amendments. But before I get started, I'm going to refer to the existing statute, and I think it's important that all of us are clear on what we mean by the existing statute. That is the existing ORS 60.357 subsection 5 that pertains only to acquisitions and that is being repealed by the bill. It appears starting at line 23 of the first page of the bill. Before I summarize this provision, it's also important to understand why corporate shareholders are not included expressly in the list of constituencies set forth in the -2 amendments. The interests of shareholders are implicit in all decisions of the Board of Directors with respect to what is in the best interest of the corporation. These types of statutes are generically called other constituency statutes because they refer to constituencies other than the shareholders. And it's quite clear that shareholders' considerations are implicit in decisions that are made by the board. In running down the -2 amendments, I want to draw your attention to some of the various considerations. Appearing at lines 5 and 6 of the -2 amendments, it provides that in determining what is in the best interest of the corporation, the board may consider the corporation's short-term and long-term interests. Short-term and long-term interests are really fundamental to any decision-making by the board of directors. Short-term and long-term interests are in the existing statute, and also they are in the corporate constituency statutes of at least 24 other states. Also, in line 6 of the preamble, it refers to other relevant factors. What this means, this is really a catch-all provision, and what it means is that the considerations in subparagraphs A, B, and C that appear at lines 8 to 14 are not exclusive, that the Board of Directors in all corporate decision-making can consider all relevant factors. And again, this provision comes from the existing statute as well as the other constituency statutes of at least 9 other states. Subparagraph A, appearing at lines 8 through 10 of the Dash 2 amendments, was discussed previously, and it provides that the Board of Directors may take into account economic, environmental, social, or ethical factors that are reasonably regarded as appropriate to the responsible conduct of the corporation's business. This provision comes from the American Law Institute's Principles of Corporate Governance, which attempts to restate existing corporate law. The Section 2.01B of the Principles of Corporate Governance provides that the Board of Directors may take into account ethical considerations that are reasonably regarded as appropriate to the responsible conduct of business, even though corporate profit and shareholder gain are not enhanced. What we have done in this provision is that we've made clear that the ethical considerations that are set forth in the principles of corporate governance include or encompass environmental and social factors. We've also added to that provision economic considerations or economic factors because they appear in the existing statute and in the constituency statutes of at least 24 other states. But we have limited appropriately economic considerations to those relating to the business of the corporation. Subparagraphs B and C that appear at lines 11 to 14 allow the Board of Directors to take into account the interests of the corporation's employees, customers, suppliers, and others having a business relationship with the corporation, and also the effects on communities or geographical areas in which the corporation operates. Again, these come from the existing statute, and they appear in the constituency statutes of at least 27 other states. Paragraph B that starts at line 15 deals with special situations pertaining to acquisitions. And again, we have continued the principle in the existing statute as it relates to acquisitions that a corporation's interest may be best served in an acquisition context by the corporation's continued independence. And all of the factors in subparagraph A, including the phrase other relevant factors, apply to corporate decision-making in an acquisition context. As was mentioned earlier, all of these provisions are permissive. Nothing in the bill requires a director to take into consideration any of these factors. And also, if these factors are taken into account, the bill does not specify how they are weighed. That's really a matter for the business judgment rule and therefore falls outside of the statute. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wolfstone.
My name is Jeffrey C. Wolfstone. I'm a shareholder in the Portland office of the law firm of Lane Powell, PC. I've been an active member of the Oregon State Bar since 1977. I work with a number of companies and advise on matters involving corporate finance, mergers and acquisitions, and corporate governance. I endorse the comments made by Professor Sneerson and by Dick Roy and Jim Kennedy. And I want to kind of wrap this up by underscoring three important points. First is, I think everyone has said ahead of me, the effect of House Bill 2829 is permissive and not mandatory in effect. Number two, the bill will bring Oregon law into line with best practices in corporate governance as witnessed by the statutes of a number of other states. And third, and perhaps most important, particularly given the focus of this committee, the adoption of the bill with the -2 proposed amendments will provide the directors of Oregon corporations with greater assurance in considering the interests of other constituencies on all matters, not just in the takeover context, the corporate equivalent, as I would say, of all-wheel drive. This, among other things, will provide a firmer platform for increasing the director's increasing support of elements of corporate social responsibility while not forcing them in any way away from other factors that they would consider, including, of course, the profitability of the enterprise. The bill has been vetted with a large number of leading corporate lawyers in the state, and it's gone through quite a bit of hard looking as we've gone through this process, and I feel comfortable, and I believe our group feels comfortable, that it's a responsible thing to do, both from the standpoint of business and from the standpoint of sustainability. Thank you for your giving us the opportunity to testify before you here today, and we'll be pleased to answer any further questions you may have.
Thank you. I imagine Representative Lizio.
Thank you. As to either of you, I know when you said that this has been vetted by the top corporate lawyers in the state, that that warmed the cockles of Representative Holby's heart. My question is, in the other states that, when you said 24, 27, can you give us a material effect, in other words, empirical case law or data, something that shows that this has made a difference?
I don't know that we can provide you with case law because there is very, very little case law that exists with respect to these other constituency statutes. They've been widely adopted in other states. Oregon has been, as prior testimony has indicated, in the minority because it's been acquisition only. And now we're taking Oregon into the mainstream of making this statute, these considerations, applicable to all decision-making by the Board of Directors. But we do have summaries of all of the states, and the factors that I listed in my testimony show up to various degrees. That's why I've indicated that the state count is a little bit different with respect to each one. But these principles are found either in those other statutes or in the American Law Institute's principles of corporate governance.
And I would just add, one of the things that we're trying to do is to modernize the statute, which was adopted in 1989. And so it's been 20 years. Things have happened in the interim. It was adopted originally, the statute that would be replaced, was adopted in a very intense period of takeover activity, and it addressed specifically that problem. And there's been a lot of learning along the way, and some of the written materials will help address that, and there's more if you'd like it. Second point I would add is that part of how this came up originally was a discussion among some of the corporate lawyers in Oregon about how do I counsel my client board of directors. And one of the questions was, well, what comes up in the case, you know, how does this really, where does the rubber meet the road? Part of it is in that boardroom setting when the question comes up and a director says, you know, what are my responsibilities? And it's reading the tea leaves. And so the statute as it's currently in effect is not very granular, and it's very broad, which is good in a sense. And so we're trying to retain the breadth, but also provide some more granularity that will allow specific references to things that boards are grappling with today as they address issues that have come before boards, including matters of sustainability.
Other questions? Representative Gillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wolfstone, you had, and in your testimony, you had six summary points. I wanted to ask you about number four, the misconception of shareholder value being the most important or the sole criterion. Tell me a little bit about your conception of the importance of shareholder value when you make corporate decisions. Where does it fit?
Well, it it's a matter, it's probably not about my opinion of it, but it's really a question of what are corporations there to do? And not every corporation is there to do exactly the same thing. And so some corporations, either by their the way that they're formed or their history or their mission or their desire to, through their board, to address particular issues, whether it's a branding issue, if a company thinks that their branding is going to be stronger because they are taking a lead in matters, let's say, of sustainability, they can sacrifice some reasonable degree of short-term profitability if they believe in the long run that the company is going to be better situated. That would be an example to your question. Company B, that would be Company A. Company B may decide that they have no interest in that, and they will seek to maximize short-term profits, and it's certainly not the intention of this bill to preclude them from doing that.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Thatcher?
I feel like I was going to be losing my chance, so I haven't got totally formulated yet.
Fine.
But
that's fine.
I didn't want to let it pass. But
no,
I'm looking at your testimony, Mr. Wallstone, that says that the proposed amendment does not substantively change Oregon corporate law. And it looks like it really doesn't change much, but maybe just modernizes and clarifies. So I'm wondering, if it wasn't passed, what would be the detriment?
I think, again, this is my opinion, and I'll ask my co-presenter here to also weigh in. I think part of it may be in the quality of the deliberation that occurs in boardrooms today, and I think that we would be helping the directors and their advisors to feel a little greater sense of comfort that as issues that touch upon those items that we've mentioned picked out, that they can make their decisions, they'll have a firmer platform on which to make those calls.
Okay, thank you.
As legal advisors to boards, we're always confronted with the issue of whether a decision will present the directors with liability. And unfortunately, in Oregon, there is very little case law related to the business judgment rule, as Professor Snierson indicated. And so what we normally have to do in Oregon is look at what Delaware has done with the business judgment rule and then extrapolate in terms of whether that law would apply in Oregon. But we can't provide a whole lot of comfort to boards. And what these provisions will do is to provide boards with greater comfort that they are able to look at issues that affect not only enhancing corporate profit and shareholder gain, but also dealing with the number of other issues that are non-economic that pertain to the corporation's business.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This brings us back to the question I had asked earlier, and that is, how would we be most likely to see these standards appear in case law? When might a lawsuit be brought? Who would bring it, and how might we see these appear and maybe unmuddle the muddled state of corporate case law?
Well, any case that's brought is going to deal with the business judgment rule, and there really hasn't been a clear articulation in this testimony of what the business judgment rule, but business judgment rule is. But it's basically a standard of judicial review, and under the business judgment rule, it means that the courts will not second guess a decision of the board of directors if certain requirements are satisfied, and one of those requirements is making an informed decision by an independent group that is reasonably believed to be in the best interest of the corporation. So any case is going to involve the business judgment rule and the issue of the standard of judicial review. What this provision will do, I would guess, is it will indicate to the courts how the directors believe that they could act within the business judgment rule. I believe that all of the standards in this statutory change are included within the business judgment rule now. So if the business judgment rule is properly applied, and that's a big if in Oregon, then the directors should be protected with their corporate decision-making and shouldn't be second-guessed by the courts. But the reason I say if is that the courts have been somewhat unclear in how they articulate the business judgment rule, and the decisions have been somewhat uneven in how they apply it. There are really just a few cases in Oregon, and as corporate lawyers, Jeff and I and all the other corporate lawyers have to take comfort in the case law of other states.
The language in the best interest of the corporation is still the guiding light. They still have to sit there and decide what's in the best interest of the corporation. And this merely calls out... Go ahead.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
And this statute calls out the fact that they can take these other elements into... these other criteria into account in reaching that point.
Right. And if we go back to... I don't know if I have it here. I do have it. If you go back to the bill, House Bill 2829, in looking at subsection 1 that starts on line 5 of page 1 of the bill itself, this is a this is the statute as it now appears, and it says it's a mandatory requirement. It says a director shall discharge the duties of a director in good faith with the care of an ordinarily prudent person in a like position and in a manner the director reasonably believes to be in the best interest of the corporation. So, yes, the prevailing consideration is what does the director reasonably believe to be in the best interest of the corporation? And what this provision does is it provides that permissibly the director may consider these other interests and these other constituencies. But the abiding question is, what does the director reasonably believe to be in the best interest of the corporation?
And just one point. And the part of this -2 amendment that, in your opinion, would be most likely to suggest to someone not with this, that there's been an expansion of the business judgment rule to include considerations of such things as sustainability and environmental. Is that the part of this that pushes the envelope, or are we even close to pushing the envelope of what you think we already have in the form of the business judgment rule?
I don't believe we're pushing the envelope. All we're doing is providing clarity.
Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because of both of you having your experience on drafting this and input, I'm interested in your opinion. If we bring Oregon into the mainstream, as you put it, mm-hmm. are we preventing more possible litigation? I know this is subjective, but I'm still interested. Or are we inviting it as we build a case study log by passing a bill as amended, as suggested it be amended, which invites more litigation?
Well, it would seem to me that if we are clarifying the business judgment rule, really what we're doing is we're perhaps causing plaintiff's lawyers to think twice about filing an action against a board of directors based on sort of the uneven application of Oregon's business judgment rule. Hmm. I mean, as corporate lawyers, what we have to do is we have to borrow from other states. And so this allows us to borrow less from other states because it just provides the clarity that we now think exists under the business judgment rule, but we're drawing in case law and from other states, principally Delaware. Excuse me.
It seems you've prompted a question from Representative Holby. Perhaps it's just a coincidence.
Every time Delaware comes up.
Yeah. So, I guess if my representative to the right can ask another question, I can too. I guess I don't have a problem with this bill. It seems to be a make the corporate director more comfortable bill in their operations of their duties. I guess my main concern
With that, I mean, albeit I would like my corporate directors to be more comfortable and you know, in making their wise decisions, but I want to make sure that we're not giving up any accountability to the shareholders in so doing. So I guess that's sort of at the crux of my issue or my question is, you know, are we giving up accountability of director decisions, you know, at least I guess only to the shareholders, and they can, you know, vote them out next time around, as was pointed out. But, I mean, is there any legal accountability anyway for these folks in this corporate structure?
Go ahead.
I'll take a quick cut at it. So there are standards that remain and that are important, and I think Jim just read from Section 1, which is the core issue. And so that accountability continues. If they act in bad faith, if they fail to use due care in informing themselves and in going about the decision-making process, or if they act in a manner that's self-interested or disloyal, they still are equally as accountable as they would be without this change. So it's really more when you get into saying, well, what in the decision-making process are they going to be thinking about? It's giving that level of clarity, but it doesn't sweep away any of those other basic points of accountability.
Thank you for that direct answer.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you guys very much for coming.
Thank you.
That completes the list of people who had signed up to testify. We've virtually cleared the room. Wondering if there's anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 2829. Seeing no interest from the assembled masses, I guess that concludes the public hearing. I would like to, if the committee agrees, I'd like to open a work session and adopt the amendments. I don't intend that we would move the bill today, but the amendments represent a syncing up, I think I can say, with the original intent that was a little bit misunderstood in the drafting process. So I'm looking up and down just to see if there's any objection to doing that, and seeing none, close the public hearing on House Bill 2829 and open a work session on House Bill 2829, and would be interested in a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments if that's agreeable. Representative Lee,
yeah, Mr. Chair, I motion that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2829.
Thank you. Representative Galizia moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2829. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries, and the Dash 2 amendments are adopted. I appreciate the good testimony and good discussion today. I think we've moved this forward, and we will look for a fiscal and revenue statement before we can move further on close the work session on House Bill 2829. And thank you, everyone, for their attendance. I expected that this might generate even a little bit more testimony, some of the challenges of calibrating our schedule so we don't rush too many things in. We miscalculate a little bit and we get a little extra time. So if there aren't any other comments, we'll use adjournment. Thanks. Okay.